issues that face countries that are implementing programs to protect children from HIV-positive mothers from getting the infection. We actually have made an enormous amount of progress. In almost every country in the world, PMTCT has taken hold. We have a lot of evidence of what works. We know that this can be done. It's a complex program, but at the same time, we have mastered many of those complexities and is now a routine program in many countries. Latest statistics are that in low and middle income countries, 33% of women who should be getting the prophylaxis for their newborns and going through comprehensive prevention of mother-child transmission program are doing so. That's up remarkably from less than 10% only 3 or 4 years earlier. On the other hand, it means that two-thirds of the women who need this care are not getting it. And, of course, the purpose of this session is to examine what are some of those obstacles which are hindering the even further acceleration of prevention mother-child transmission implementation. We know that the flow-through of women who attend prenatal clinics, who get tested, who have counseling, who are found to be positive, who go through the regimen, which is now advanced into a regimen of drugs before birth, to the child after birth, advice and counseling on breastfeeding or alternative feeding, depending on the local circumstances and the mother's situation, and then the infant diagnosis early on. These are a number of steps, but again, none of them is so challenging that it hasn't been done even in the most resource-poor and marginal settings. So we're eager to hear from four distinguished panelists with good experience in the field about the PMTCT, as well as to hear from those who have been, those of you in the audience who have good experiences to add. And I repeat, please feel free to move up. There are plenty of seats in the front. And I am delighted to introduce Gloria, my co-host, to start the program.
Hello.
Yes.
My name is Gloria Sangia, and I work for Family Health International, looking at issues related to counseling and testing as well as PMTCT. And I'm here to co-host this session with Jimmy Coker, which I won't go into details, but very and broadly speaking is to try to share the lessons that has been learned in different countries, share some experiences, and of course have discussion with you. Given the time constraints and us wishing to go ahead and be able to attend the opening session, I'll take this opportunity to introduce our first speaker. Our first speaker is Dr. Ying Ru Lu, and she's the coordinator at the WHO, a coordinator of the prevention in the health sector. Dr. Lu is an infectious disease physician from Hamburg, Germany, who took up her duties with WHO as in the HIV/AIDS department as the coordinator of prevention. Dr. Lu has over two decades of working experience as a clinician and public health advisor in prevention, care, and treatment of HIV and AIDS, working in Europe, Latin America, and 10 years with WHO in Southeast Asia. This afternoon, welcome Dr. Lu for this session. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gloria, and thank you very much, Jimmy, for the introduction. Before I start, I would like to thank the staff who have been preparing this satellite session in WHO and in UNICEF, and in particular Tintin Sindh, who's running around, and René, Pini, and Cheve, who have been helping to organize and putting the session together. The title of the presentation is The Emerging Evidence on Prevention of Mother-to-Child Transmission of HIV. I would like to briefly present on the progress made globally, some key issues, present a few of the new data on use of antiretroviral drugs for prevention of HIV infant feeding transmission, doing better with what we have now in implications for WHO guidelines. Since the majority of HIV infections in children are acquired from their mothers, the global epidemiology of HIV in children reflects that of HIV in women. In 2007, 67% of the estimated 33 million people living with HIV worldwide were living in sub-Saharan Africa. Women accounted for approximately half of people living with HIV globally and 60% in sub-Saharan Africa. In 2007, 1.5 million pregnant women in low and middle-income countries were living with HIV, of whom almost 90% were found in just 20 countries. 19 of these 20 countries in sub-Saharan Africa. I would just like to remind of the four key elements for prevention of HIV infection in infants and children, which was discussed and endorsed by the UN partners and UNAIDS at a strategic approaches meeting in 2002 in Morges. And unless these four elements are in place, first, primary prevention of HIV in parents-to-be, prevention of unwanted pregnancies in HIV-infected women, prevention of transmission of HIV from mothers to their infants, and ultimately appropriate treatment, care, and support, the number of HIV infections in children be reduced. And I would just like to mention one example, which I showed here below. The Thai data, this is the HIV prevalence in pregnant women at first ANC visit in Thailand between 1991 to 2007, leveling off. These data were fundamental in formulating the approach of the four elements for the prevention of management of HIV infection in infants. And Thailand is a program which has scaled up primary prevention programs such as 100% condom program targeting sex workers and their clients. They have strong family planning services, and they have introduced very early HIV testing and counseling in antenatal care services, and successfully decreased with the introduction of antiretroviral prophylaxis and formula feeding the number of new pediatric HIV infections, as you can see here now, between 1994 down to 2007. For pregnant women to access any intervention for prevention of transmission requires the knowledge of their HIV status. The WHO and UNAIDS released a guidance on provider-initiated HIV testing and counseling in healthcare settings in 2007. This recommends HIV testing for all pregnant women in antenatal delivery and postpartum services according to the level of the HIV epidemic. In the Global Universal Access Report released by WHO, UNAIDS, and UNICEF in June this year, we can see that the overall proportion of pregnant women who received HIV testing increased from 10% in 2004, that's the yellow bar, to 18% in 2007, a nearly twofold increase. And we have the breakdown here by region. It's probably a little bit difficult to see. Sub-Saharan Africa is on the very left, East and Southeast Asia, Latin America, and Eastern Europe and Central Europe on the right. As Jimmy already mentioned, tremendous progress has been made with prevention of mother-to-child transmission. The data which are regularly reported to UNICEF and also to WHO and UNAIDS show that from the 81% of 109 countries reporting, they are implementing prevention of mother-to-child transmission programs. The coverage of pregnant women, what you see on the left, receiving any antiretroviral drug for the prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV increased from 10% in 2004 to 33% in 2007. However, the coverage of PMTCT services varies tremendously between countries and even within countries, the one single countries. Data on the impact of quality of services on PMTCT are, however, not systematically collected. As of 2007, Nearly 50% of pregnant women, as you can see here in this part of the pie chart, and their infants were still receiving only single-dose nevirapine for the prevention of mother-to-child transmission. And we all know that this regimen is less efficacious compared to current WHO recommendations to provide dual antiretroviral prophylaxis, administering a combination of AZT with single-dose nevirapine or antiretroviral therapy for eligible pregnant women. In 2006, WHO released guidelines on use of antiretroviral drugs. I just talked about them, these for treating pregnant women and preventing HIV infection in infants. These guidelines were harmonized with a set of other guidelines released in the same year on antiretroviral therapy in adults and adolescents, as well as infants and children, revised WHO definitions on clinical and immunological staging and cotrimoxazole. And just this year, a few weeks ago, we released guidance on use of antiretrovirals for post-exposure prophylaxis. The use of antiretroviral therapy in pregnant women with low CD4 counts or advanced clinical disease reduces significantly not only the risk of mother-to-child transmission of HIV, but also morbidity and deaths among mothers and improves survivals of their children. When a pregnant woman is diagnosed with HIV infection, her clinical stage and, where available, her CD4 count must be assessed to determine whether she is eligible for antiretroviral treatment. The criteria for initiating antiretroviral treatment for pregnant women are the same as for non-pregnant women, with a notable exception of pregnant women who have a clinical stage 3, where it is recommended to start at a CD4 count below 350 cells per cubic millimeter. So in summary, it is recommended to start to treat in clinical stage 3 and 4 if CD4 testing is not available. If CD4 testing is available in WHO clinical stage 1 and 2, if CD4 count is less than 200, at stage 3, less than 350, as I mentioned before, and at stage 4, irrespective of CD4 count. I just would like you to remind you of the recommended first-line antiretroviral treatment regimen for eligible pregnant women. The recommendation is to use two nucleosides plus one NNRTI, AZT3TC, nevirapine, twice daily, antepartum, intrapartum, and postpartum, and to the baby AZT for 7 days. If the mother received less than 4 weeks of ART during pregnancy, one would extend the AZT administration to 4 weeks. For pregnant women not eligible for ART, the recommendation currently is to provide antepartum AZT combined with single-dose nevirapine intrapartum and intrapartum AZT3TC. The AZT3TC intrapartum serves is designed to reduce of developing resistance to nevirapine in the mother and the postpartum regimen as well with AZT3TC for 7 days, and to the infant single-dose nevirapine and AZT for 7 days. Again, if the mother received less than 4 weeks of ART during pregnancy, give 4 weeks of infant AZT. As operational contexts vary considerably between countries and even within a country, as I mentioned before, the guidelines gave alternatives and minimum options for ARV prophylaxis. I mentioned a few of them here in settings that do not currently have the capacity to deliver the recommended PMTCT prophylaxis regimen or those alternative or minimum regimens. At least they should implement single-dose nevirapine. Unfortunately, at the moment, this is still the case in nearly 50% of the countries reporting to UNICEF and WHO. However, in these circumstances, the specific obstacles to delivering more effective regimen should be identified and actions taken to overcome them. While breastfeeding carries significant health benefits to infants and young children, HIV can be transmitted during breastfeeding from an HIV-infected mother to her infant. Breastfeeding accounts, as you know, for one-third to one-half of all HIV transmission from mothers to their infants. The most appropriate infant feeding option for an HIV-infected mother depends on her individual circumstances, including her health status and the local situation. The health services available and the counselling and support she's likely to receive must be considered. The World Health Organization recommends HIV-infected women breastfeed their infants exclusively for the first 6 months of life, unless replacement feeding is acceptable, feasible, affordable, sustainable, and safe. We talk about AFAS for them and their infants before that time. In case those conditions, the AFAS conditions, are met, WHO recommends avoidance of all breastfeeding by HIV-infected women. The ultimate goal is to promote HIV-free child survival, which includes avoiding HIV transmission through breastfeeding and minimizing risk or other morbidity and mortality. We are facing a number of issues to work towards that goal in many resource-limited settings, being operational and managerial issues, systems issues, socioeconomic issues, and also technical issues. In this presentation, in the rest of the presentation, I would like to focus on recent data on the use of antiretroviral drugs to prevent postnatal HIV transmission. The benefits of lifelong therapy for pregnant women who need antiretroviral treatment for their own health are clear. And triple combination antiretroviral regimens are now routinely used for prevention of mother-to-child transmission, irrespective of the severity of maternal HIV disease in the non-breastfeeding context of many countries in the industrialized world. For example, in the Women and Infants Transmission Study in the U.S., HIV transmission was 1.2% in infants who were not breastfed, and similar data reported from European cohorts, often associated also with cesarean sections. But we are talking about a public health approach to prevention of mother-to-child transmission, and we are looking at low- and middle-income countries. So in the context of countries where replacement feeding is not safe, a number of studies are looking at provision of triple combination antiretroviral regimens given as a prophylaxis to the mother starting antepartum and continuing throughout the breastfeeding period, regardless of CD4 count, and stopping with them with or shortly after cessation of exclusive breastfeeding. So this is this part. Other studies are looking at prolonged ARV prophylaxis to the newborn. Two studies were published recently, and a number of studies are still ongoing. Here we see data from four observational studies, DREAM Plus, presenting data from Mozambique, Mitra Plus from Tanzania, Amata in Rwanda, and the Kisumu breastfeeding study in Kenya. In all four studies, women received antepartum triple antiretroviral drugs regardless of CD4 count and continued until 6 months postpartum, with the exceptions of the Amata study in Rwanda, where women continued until 7 months postpartum. All mothers were counseled to exclusively breastfeed for 6 months. All studies showed promising results with reduced HIV breastfeeding transmission rates. The data presented here excludes infants infected at birth and age 4 to 6 weeks. So that's why you have very, very low transmission rates. And these data show that very low transmission rates can be achieved in breastfeeding women under triple antiretroviral combination prophylaxis therapy and steered therapy while keeping the benefits of breastfeeding. Other studies are available. I'll show them in the next slide, but difficult to compare at this time, such as the Keshobora study. The data will be, the final data of Keshobora, for example, will only be available in 2009. This slide is comparing from different studies, the Kisumu breastfeeding study, Keshobora, and the PMT50 Plus study in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire, maternal antepartum and postpartum triple antiretroviral data by CD4 count. And they show basically in the KIBS and Keshebora that equally low transmission rates are being observed in women receiving triple antiretrovirus with lower CD4 counts and higher CD4 counts. In Keshebora, the cumulative risk of HIV transmission was 7.6% in women with a CD4 less than 200, and in women with CD4 more than 500 at this point of time, the cumulative risk was also low, and there was only one late postnatal transmission observed in that cohort until now in a baby reportedly already weaned. In the Abidjan study, we saw higher transmission rates in the women receiving short course antiretrovirals, but this can't really be compared to the triple ARV part because the study was not powered to compare both arms. And it's important to note in the Abidjan study that the infant-free survival in the two groups were not different between infants born to women with high or low risk of HIV transmission. But we need clearly more data to study the additional benefit of provision of triple antiretrovirals for women with higher CD4 count for reducing HIV breastfeeding transmission. What are the consequences of providing triple antiretrovirals for mothers' health? There are no data, or very, very few data, basically no data, on the consequences of stopping antiretroviral therapy for pregnant women not eligible for antiretroviral therapy. There's concern that data which were recently published in GID from the SMART study team showing that antiretroviral therapy interruptions are associated with the increased risk of opportunistic infections and deaths. And in fact, the rates of opportunistic infections and deaths were higher in patients discontinuing treatment versus those on continued treatment in periods with a CD4 count higher than 350 cells per milliliter. So we certainly need much more data on safety of triple antiretroviral therapy. And these were not women. These were pregnant women. These were adults. Palombi presented data in CROI on interruptions of triple prophylactic antiretroviral drugs in 220 pregnant women who stopped drugs 6 months postpartum with mean CD4 of around 500 cells per cubic milliliter and about 8,000 HIV RNA copies. And he showed that after 1 year, clinical and immunological values were similar after drug interruption.
Yingyi. Your time is nearly up. Please
okay,
wrap up.
So I'm also nearly finished. I would just like to present two studies which were recently published from randomized control studies. This Sven study, a modified intention to treat study conducted in Ethiopia, India, and Uganda, where infants received single dose nivirapine and 6 weeks extended nivirapine, and a randomized control trial in Malawi where infants received 14 weeks extended nivirapine. In the Sven study, the 6 weeks extended nivirapine at 6 months didn't show a significant benefit on prevention of HIV breastfeeding transmission. But you can see that in the PP Malawi trial, there was around 50% benefit to providing extended nivirapine. So there has been great success overall in reducing mother-to-child transmission in resource-rich countries and to a lesser extent, but also considerable in resource-limited countries. Remaining questions are in particular with respect to antiretroviral therapy. Is it safe to stop triple combination antiretroviral prophylaxis in women who no longer need it for PMTCT and do not yet meet criteria for ARV treatment? Secondly, what should be the optimal ARV prophylaxis regimen for PMTCT that will be safest for mother and infant among women with higher CD4 counts in resource-limited settings? Thirdly, is maternal triple ARV prophylaxis safe in terms of toxicity for mother and the infant? Fourth, what are the implications of transmitted drug resistance for future treatment options in HIV-infected infants?
Fifth, what is the benefit of triple ARV prophylaxis for women who don't need ART compared to dual ARV? And what is the benefit of continuing triple ARV prophylaxis versus stopping it? And what are the operational and cost, the feasibility and the cost? For ARV, extended ARV in infants, is extended exposure of ARVs to HIV-negative infants safe? What would be the optimum duration of administration to the infants? What are the implications of emergence of drug resistance on prophylaxis and future treatment options? And what are operational implications? So we should do much
Please,
better
very
with
quickly.
What we have. I have to stop now. I just wanted to announce that WHO is actually keeping its guidelines up to date. And we are planning a consultation to review the new evidence for later this year by several departments in WHO. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Liu. In the interest of time, we'll have all the presenters going through the presentation and then we'll have the questions later. At this stage, we'd like to invite Dr. Max Bope from Zambia. Dr. Bope is a medical doctor with more than 12 years' experience in practicing in public health sector. He was formerly a registrar in obstetrics and gynecology at the University Teaching Hospital. He has a postgraduate diploma in public health as well as behavioral change modeling communication. He was appointed as the first program manager in Zambia under the Minister of Health in 2005 to date. He currently chairs the Public Health Board of Zambia Medical Association and is the focal point for PMTCT in Zambia, where he's involved in several consultations on PMTCT and pediatric well, as well as chairing the National Development of Protocol and Guidelines in Zambia. This afternoon, Dr. Bopo.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much. I shall be looking at increasing. Thank you. I shall be looking at increasing access of women and children to HIV testing and counseling through the introduction of provider initiated testing and counseling into antenatal delivery and postnatal care settings. That is experiences from Zambia. Zambia is somewhere in the center of Africa. I would like to invite you to come and visit one day. There it is. Right, I would like to start by putting up this statement that according to WHO UNAIDS, modeling for estimates of required coverage that will impact on the progression of the HIV/AIDS pandemic, we need the coverage of at least 50% of the target population. My presentation summary will basically look at the epidemiology. We look at the overview, the program history in Zambia, our guiding principles, and how we justify our approaches. Then I'll go through what has been achieved and the trends of where we're going, as well as briefly mention some of the program constraints. We are approximately 11 million total population. We are in sub-Saharan Africa. Administratively, Zambia is divided into 9 provinces, which have a total of 73 districts. We have a 16% prevalence of HIV among pregnant women, and we have about 500,000 births per year, actually about 468,000. Without intervention, we've been finding that our mother-to-child transmission of HIV has been about 30%. And some of the demographics are that 49% of pregnant women deliver at home. An overview, I mentioned that 61% deliveries are in institutions otherwise conducted by skilled attendants. 93% of pregnant women have at least one antenatal visit. In the urban areas, about 70% have 3 visits in the antenatal minimum. In the rural areas, about 20% are able to access 3 visits. For children, we have 90% BCG coverage, which offers a window of opportunity for intervention. Our postnatal attendance, again, drops very low to about 20%. And together with our partners, we've been implementing a comprehensive program, which means introduction of a more efficacious combination regimen, equipping the health providers with the skills needed to provide care, ensuring availability of pediatric products and formulations, expanding counseling and testing to children, and establishing a system for PCR HIV DNA early infant diagnosis, as well as entrenching district-level planning using population-based targets.
Okay. Please remember you have just 15 minutes, and I'm a very strict taskmaster.
Thank you very much for using up 10 seconds of my time. The program history is that we began implementing in about 1999 and developed lessons which we used to integrate PMTCT into the MCH. From there, we developed a framework, from 2003 to 2006, and used a cascade model to reach every district in Zambia. After this, in 2006, we had the major program review, and we invited our IATT partners so that we could go through and see how the program was doing, to rethink strategies for reaching universal access, how we could easily use more efficacious regimens, decentralize services, entrench population-based target setting, as well as innovative use and support of community-level initiatives, and much more cardinally, introduction of provider-initiated testing and counseling. Our guiding principles are that the Zambian government provides leadership with courage, clarity of purpose, and support to frontline workers with unambiguous messages to the public about where we want to go and how we shall achieve it. All pregnant women would be tested for HIV as part of normal care, thus normalizing HIV care. And we drive demand by appropriate communication strategies. We ensure that we avail logistics and support to implement PICT are available. And not to forget, we procure technical assistance and also avail to the lower levels whenever a need arises. And we've developed a harmonized M&E as well. And not forgetting that we've been very strong on leveraging of resources from internal and external sources. Justification for a more assertive approach is that HIV and AIDS is a declared national public health priority problem. We've got epidemic proportions with 16% of pregnant women who are positive. And we know without interventions, 30% transmission risk, as well as progression of the mom to AIDS. We also know that proven interventions are available within the country. And we realize that business as usual was not taking us very far. And you know that in sub-Saharan Africa, the HIV epidemic is rather feminized. And this made that we were obligated to open a second entry point for care apart from general HIV services for women. And we also realized that there was a hesitant approach to HIV testing in pregnancy due to there being unclear guidance to health workers on the front line. The process is that testing and counseling is initiated in the antenatal, labor and delivery and postnatal services by the service provider, and a record of all these events is kept, because we believe that what is not written down is not done. Babies, we initiate testing at 6 weeks, 12 months, and 18 months. HIV-positive moms are enrolled into the pre-heart program and are followed up. Babies are registered as HIV-exposed and are tracked using the under-5 card and register. So what have we been able to achieve? Running through briefly, year 2004, we were able to provide services to about 74,000 pregnant women, which was somewhere about 1/5 of the population in need. In year 05, we were able to go to 94,000 out of a denominator of about 500,000. And 07, we were able, after introducing PITC, you see that we reached from 79,000 in 2005, we were able to give care to 306,000. So of the estimated 500,000 pregnancies annually, we were able to identify 97,000 of them as being HIV positive. We've increased coverage to have 678 sites from about 200 countrywide. And we were able to test 61% of all pregnant women in the country. And we found about 17% of them were HIV positive. We were only able to give prophylaxis to 36% of the women that we had seen, and there are issues with that as well. And babies, again, only 16% of the babies were able to get the acceptable full package of care that we've opted to use. Then DNA, HIV, PCR testing for early, for babies. We've got 124 sites countrywide which are engaged in a courier system with hubs, and they transport to three central labs which do PCR for us. And we were able to test last year a total of 7,664 babies. And of this number, if you see the column, the lighter column is the number of babies tested, and the blue column is the number of those who we are finding to be HIV positive. And this is a graph showing the trends of children on antiretroviral therapy. It's a gradual rise, but we think we are going to accelerate now. And so far, we are putting everything in place. Results. We've seen an added advantage that facility deliveries in Zambia have increased from 47% to 61% in the past 5 years. And we tend to believe there must be a contribution of the way we are providing PMTCT services. We know that 50% of women needing heart now have been initiated on it versus 59% of men. So this is again a reflection of that we are adding more emphasis on the pregnant women, and the results are showing that we are attending to the women much more to the men. Population-based coverage of HIV pregnant women. Of all eligible women, 14% accessed care in 2005, 25% in 2006, and 39% as per 31st December 2007. And in selected areas, we found that transmission of MTCT has been reduced from an initial 30% to between 9 to 11%. Let me hasten to inform you that 25% of our women are using the more efficacious combination regimens of AZT, 3TC, and NVP. The other 75, by year end 2007, had still been using NVP, and we want to try and reverse this by year end of this. We've seen a decrease in dropout of clients from the program due to same day testing and giving of results, with reflex CD4 testing done on the same day as well. A summary of the key tools we are using: the mother's ANC card, which has provision for HIV status, delivery register documenting HIV status and interventions given, postnatal record of delivery interventions to optimize delivery, as well as a feeding option initiated, revised under 5 register documenting feeding practice, as well as tracing interventions given to baby, including infant feeding choice, cotrimoxazole initiation, early PCR testing, and ARV prophylaxis given. We have streamlined the training package for health workers and community lay workers and put very clear protocols, guidelines, and job aids. And we've introduced a system of mentoring of service providers, which we've realized is a very key part of interventions. Lessons learned and the way forward. This strategy, PITC, has increased acceptability of HIV testing by mothers, both for PMTCT as well as for children. The rollout has been very well accepted. It's feasible and desirable, and it's possibly imperative. It has made us strengthen linkages among programs, MNCH, malaria, HIV, AIDS, nutrition for synergy, as well as geographical equity of services. We still feel that mentoring of trained healthcare workers in pediatric HIV care services is needed, and then monitoring and implementation of pediatric HIV care services and scale-up of plans is a major priority in the way forward. some of the program constraints, as in the most of the third world, it's human resource deficits, both in numbers and capabilities, and then a lack of predictable, sustained financing. We've got inadequate infrastructure, especially in the rural areas. Then we have to work hard at community level M&E. Our logistics system still needs to be lubricated, as we still have pockets of stockouts and things like that. And then we still have insufficient systems for care of the HIV-exposed child, and we don't have sufficient male partner involvement. Up to 2010, we want to build on lessons learned and maintain successful approaches, improve them, both within from the in-country lessons and from the global arena. We want to entrench PITC countrywide and in all points of service delivery. We plan to reach 61% of eligible HIV-positive pregnant women by December 2008 and 80% by 2010, and we are on track. And we plan to avert 50% of infections to children by 2010. I would like to acknowledge all PMTCT and pediatric HIV champions who are operating in Zambia and who are supporting us externally. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Burupe, for almost keeping time. The next speaker is Martha Mukun-Menega, who's a pediatrician, also has a Master's of Public Health from the Institute of Tropical Medicine in Rwanda. She's worked in the HIV field since 1999 and is now with the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation in Rwanda as technical director. She will present the PMTCT program in Rwanda on behalf of Elevani Nyankesha, who could not be here.
Okay, thank you so much. I'd like to apologize for my little English, but I'm going to transmit the message. The PMTCT program in Rwanda, I'm going to present the national, the background first, and after that, the national HIV response, the strategy, some key results, lessons learned, and the challenges and the way forward. Talking about the background, I would like to highlight that Rwanda is a very small country with around 9 million. The population is 9 million. What I would like to highlight too is that the access to clean water is still really a big problem. Talking about some maternal and child health indicators, I would like to share with you that the fertility rate is really high. The other thing is that we still have a lot of to do in delivery in health facility, because according to our last DHS, We have 15.6% of pregnant women delivering. Only that portion is delivering at a health facility. If I talk about HIV prevalence in Rwanda, I would like to show you that 5% is the prevalence, HIV prevalence in pregnant women. What was the national HIV response in Rwanda? Starting in 1987, we had a national AIDS control program. And in 1999, the first PMTCT site has been opened. In 2001, we had the National AIDS Commission instead of National AIDS Control Program. And at this time, we had also the treatment and the research on AIDS Center, which is really working closely with clinicians and to make PMTCT really applicable. This slide shows you some milestones, and I would like to highlight that since 2005, Rwanda has introduced the more efficacious RRT regimen in PMTCT. What is the package given to pregnant, given to mother and infant? To the pregnant woman, routine counseling and testing is given, not only to the mother, to the pregnant woman, but also to her partner. The laboratory investigation is also done. The routine pregnant medication is given. For example, malaria prevention and anemia prevention. I'll be talking about the ARV prophylaxis. The package includes also safe practices delivery, infant feeding, counseling and support, family planning services, and psychosocial and adherence support. To the exposed infant, post-exposure prophylaxis is given, the CTX, and monitoring of growth and symptom of early HIV infection are also monitored. The early infant diagnosis through DNA PCR and serology is also done. This is the clinical and the biological criteria for heart initiation in HIV pregnant women. And I would like to take a minute and talk about the ARV prophylaxis guidelines in PMTCT program in Rwanda. We have four scenarios. The first one is when a pregnant woman has to take RRT because she is eligible for RRT. Those kind of women will have AZT3TC and nevirapine in antepartum period. And after delivery, she will continue with the treatment. The second scenario is the women who are not yet eligible for RRT. She receives AZT starting at 28 weeks, and during the labor, she will be receiving single dose of nevirapine, and after delivery, AZT-30C for 7 days. The third scenario is the pregnant woman tested after that 4 weeks. She will have triple therapy, and after delivery, she will have AZT-30C for 7 days. The last category is the pregnant woman seen in the labor room, or the pregnant woman who has a husband infected, HIV infected. For all of the scenario, the infant will be receiving single dose nevirapine, single dose, and AZT syrable for 4 weeks. We had to implement this complex regimen. In Rwanda, we had three types of sites. The first one is a site with RRT and PMTCT services. The second is a kind of site which is giving only PMTCT services. And we have also some site with all PMTCT services without RRT. What have been done is to put place a training of trainer agenda. After that, to train the health care providers and to put in place doctors team to assist health center to initiate RRT for HIV infected pregnant and to develop an MNE tool for that. Some results. As you could see, in 1999, we had only one site giving PMTCT services. Now, by May 2008, we have 308 sites giving PMTCT services. This slide is showing you that on counseling and testing, we still increase women who are having counseling and testing. Talking about, this is an example to show you that among pregnant women, CD4 count is being done. And this is the result for the first and the second term of 2008. I would like to share with you that in Rwanda, we have the nevirapine single dose is decreasing, and the nevirapine plus AZT is slowly increasing among HIV-infected pregnant women. Talking about health facility deliveries among HIV-infected women, if we try to compare with the all women, I could show you that in red we have delivery among all women, and in yellow, health facility delivery among HIV-infected women. We still have more HIV-infected women delivering at health facility if we compare with all women. And we believe that we are getting those results because of counseling. I would like here to share with you the coverage of ARV prophylaxis among HIV exposed infants. In 2005, we had 58% of expected children for ARV. We had only 58% receiving ARV prophylaxis. But now, if we look at data from January to May 2008, we are giving to 87% of expected children, we are giving to them RRT prophylaxis. I would like to say that ARV prophylaxis includes both nevirapine single dose plus AZT. Talking about infant feeding practice at birth among HIV-infected mother, I'd like to show that most of mothers are breastfeeding. Now, moving on the lesson learned, I'd like to say that the coordination done by Ministry of Health and the PMTCT Technical Working Group has done a lot in coordination. We had the support of Rwanda politician. The decentralization of CD4 count system from national level to district level, the reorganization of services to make CD4 count a reality, and the development of JOBES and the vision of monitoring tools has make shifting to more efficacious RRV regime possible.
Dr. Mukunega, 1 minute, please.
Okay. Let's go to the challenges. We still have challenges in insufficient number of laboratory performing CD4 count. Means of transport, I'm talking about transport of samples for CD4 count. And indeed, delay of results, because if we had to transport samples from a site to another, it takes time to get the result. I'd like also to talk about the scaling up of DNA PCR to make early infant diagnosis, postnatal HIV transmission during the breastfeeding, and the fact that in Rwanda, RRT prescription up to now is done by only doctors. Way forward, lastly, is integrating the monitoring of more efficacious regimen within the National Electronic Health Information System to strengthen the capacity of laboratory for CD4 testing, clinical monitoring to support scaling up of more efficacious regimen, scaling up early infant diagnosis. We have mother-to-mother approach to strengthen psychosocial support and adherence to program, and lastly, winning food. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mukumeneta. The next speaker is Professor Lin Hong Wang, who works at the Chinese National Center for Women and Children's Health. She's been working for many years in the area of women's and children's health, and more recently on PMTCT. Professor Wang is also the head of the National Technical Expert Team on PMTCT in China.
Thanks, Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm very glad to have a chance to share the experience on PMTCT and sexual and reproductive health service from China. So this is my presentation profile. At first, I'd like to introduce some background data in China. By the end of the 2008, it is estimated that 700,000 are now positive, HIV positive. Among them, about 30% were women. But the cumulative total of the reported HIV positive was more than 200,000, including 62,000 AIDS case and 22,000 recorded deaths. For the transmission way, the proportion of the sexual transmission increased from only 30% among the cumulative reported case before 2007 increased to the 41% among the reported case in 207. So the sexual transmission is now the main mode in China. Also, another thing is the proportion of the sexual transmission increased. Another thing is the mother-to-child transmission. The proportion is increased very quickly from the 0.1 to from the 1998 to 1.6% in 2007. This is the background of the MCH. So you can see the antenatal care coverage is the 89%, hospital delivery is 91%, skilled birth attendant at birth is 98%. In whole China, maternal mortality ratio is the 36, and the infant mortality ratio is 15 per 1,000. For the PMPCT, the Chinese government put very strong focus on the HIV and AIDS prevention and control, include PMTCT. The many positive policy were made, such as the 4-3 and 1-care policy. So you can see the free counseling test and the treatment for HIV positive pregnancy women and their newborn baby. And also we have a national AIDS regulation. The PMTCT is the important part of them. And we have a series of the policy were made by the promote and improve the PMTC work. So there's some policy and the document from the government. For PMTCT, we also the financial support for PMTCT increased every year, including for the government's financial support, include free HIV test and counseling. This is provided for the old pregnancy women in the program area. And the ARV and the ARV infant formula and the follow-up service, and some financial assistance for the hospital delivery in the rural area are freely provided for the HIV infected pregnancy women. For the service, PMPC service, we combined the PITC and the VCT. Also, the couple visit test and the counseling are encouraged. Strengthen the MCH service for the HIV infected pregnancy women, follow up and hospital delivery, safe delivery assistance. And we more effectively combined ARV treatment both for the infected pregnant women and their infant, and also include the quality of the ARV treatment. And also we encourage and support the formula feeding for the infant. Strengthen the child health care for the children born to the HIV positive pregnancy women, and also provide the care support and the referral service. For the achievement, more pregnancy women and their children received the PMTCT service. The data were from the 271 national program counties. From September of the 2003, to the end of the last year, total 4 million of the pregnancy women have received the NAC service. Among them, 82% concealed for HIV and 79% get test. For the HIV positive women, pregnant women, their infants, 74% of the women get the ARV treatment, and 83 infants get the ARV medicine, and 88% of the infants get the formula feeding. From till the last year, we get the achievement for the mother-to-child transmission rate is estimated to be reduced by 60%. Another achievement is the coverage increasing each year. But we scaling up quickly. So from the for the national PMTC program was initiated from the one pilot county from the 2001. The program areas were increased each year since then. Most of them are in the relative high prevalence. So far, national PMTC program has covered 333 counties all over the country. And the PMTC program close link with the national HIV and AIDS promotion and the national MCH service and reproductive health work. For the PMTCT and the sexual and the reproductive health service being linked, so we provide integrated HIV prevention, education, and HIV PMTCT service into the national sexual and reproductive health program. And others it provide perinatal family planning and HIV PMTC service, including the condom promotion by the health and the family planning sectors. And also a series of the technical guidelines such as global elimination of the congenital syphilis and the regional operation framework for linking HIV STI service with reproductive health, adolescents, maternal and newborn and child health service edited by WHO were translated into Chinese. And also we already developed some relevant guidelines such as the prevention and the treatment guideline for congenital syphilis in China, and we developed a national plan for the prevention and the transmitted for congenital syphilis in China. Also, the operational linkage proposal is being developed in 30,000 to 5,000 women and their partners to the plan to be covered. Although we have got much achievement, but for the challenge, because China is very big, population is large, so for the size of the China, PMTCT coverage is still low. And also we still have the poor collaborating among health and non-health sectors. And also the weak capability to provide quality MCH service. For the follow-up, we are still very weak for infected women and their children. Also, the early infant diagnosis available is very few size, only in the, for the summer research area. And we lack of the continuous provision of the ARV tailored for the infant and the small children. And another thing is no enabling policy directive. Also, the evidence that there will be work still have to be generated. Also, the inadequate funding and the human resource restricts stigma and the discrimination. Another thing is the poor involvement of the NGO and the private sectors. For the next step, we will assess the feasibility of the operationalizing the PMTCT and the sexual and reproductive health service. And also the finalized the linkage framework for China based on the pilot experience. And also increase the coverage at the rate of the 100 more counties per year in the next 2 years is supported by UN UNITECH, and we get many support from UNICEF, UNFPA, and WHO. And also strengthen the capability to run the effective program like PMT service mechanism and the multi-sector cooperation and responsibility and training. And also improve the quality of the PMTCT service. So this year the scaling progress has been speed up with the quickly increasing financial support by both the central and the local government in the line with the target set by the NGAS and the Universal Access Declaration of the Commitment. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you, Professor Wang. Our final speaker is Ilcia Rebecca Garcia Morales, who's a psychologist and holds a master's in educational administration. She's on the faculty of the University of Francisco Marroquin and also is national coordinator, the STD HIV AIDS Counseling National Program on AIDS in Guatemala. Ms. Garcia Morales.
Buenas tardes a todos y a todas. Antes de iniciar la presentación, quiero agradecer a OMS, UNFPA, por el apoyo técnico y financiero en la elaboración de esta guía y contarles un poco que esta guía está adaptada en base a la guía de Consejería de Alimentación de la OMS. El perfil geográfico de Guatemala. Guatemala está ubicada en el extremo norte del Istmo Centroamericano. Estamos acá. Tenemos un PIB de 67.45 miles de millones. Tenemos una población de 12.700.611. Y el 24% de la población no tiene agua tratada. El idioma oficial es el español. Mas, sin embargo, no es utilizado por todas las personas del país, porque Guatemala es un país multilingüe donde tenemos 23 idiomas autóctonos. La caracterización de la epidemia en el país, tenemos actualmente reportados hasta diciembre del 2007 10.756 casos de SIDA, de los cuales el 70% son de sexo masculino. La edad más afectada está entre 20 y 39 años. Esto equivale a un 62% del total de casos. La vía de transmisión, el 94% de los casos reportados es por la vía sexual. Tenemos un 5% de transmisión madre a hijo y tenemos una epidemia concentrada donde tenemos una cero prevalencia menor del 1% en embarazadas y en grupos vulnerables, en hombres que tienen sexo con hombres, 11.5 y en trabajadoras comerciales del sexo, 8.7. Si ustedes lo ven, este es mi país. Los colores que están más fuertes son las áreas que están más afectadas por la epidemia, donde más casos de SIDA tenemos. Es un corredor que colinda con fronteras, donde hay más bares y que también puertos. El programa de prevención de la transmisión vertical en Guatemala inició en el año de 1998. Era el programa, solo era demanda, solo en aquellos casos que los médicos detectaban que había riesgo o que ya había alguna manifestación de alguna enfermedad oportunista, se le ofrecía la prueba a la señora y si era positiva entraba al programa y solo era monoterapia. Actualmente tenemos el programa Contamisaje en 28 áreas de salud, de 29 áreas de salud que tenemos en el país. De estas 28 áreas estamos teniendo una cobertura de 183 servicios de salud, que incluyen servicios del segundo y tercer nivel de atención, de un total de 344 servicios. Tenemos actualmente una cobertura del 49%, esperamos que para el finales del 2009 estemos en el 100% de los servicios. El programa de prevención de la transmisión vertical en Guatemala es desarrollado e implementado en colaboración con el Ministerio de Salud Pública, el patronato del Roosevelt, que tiene apoyo de UNICEF, CONEVI, ASEXA y el apoyo que tenemos actualmente de la propuesta del Fondo Global. Tenemos un formato de reporte y seguimiento único para todo el tamizaje que se hace de transmisión vertical, así como también de todos los casos en pediatría para hacer el seguimiento. Tenemos una base automatizada para recolectar toda esta información que está implementada en toda la red de servicios de salud. Y el 100% del personal multidisciplinario que lleva el programa de prevención de la transmisión vertical está capacitado. Se han tamizado, las mujeres tamizadas tenemos una cobertura de 14.7% en las primeras consultas. Nosotros tenemos un total de 297.713 consultas, de esto estamos llegando a un 15%. En el 2007 se tamizaron 43.754 mujeres, de estas tuvimos 203 mujeres que fueron positivas, equivale a 1.46%. Mujeres embarazadas, que ya estaban embarazadas y que se embarazaron, fueron 19. Y en el 2008 hemos tamizado 24.630 y llevamos 82 mujeres positivas. El tratamiento de mujeres embarazadas, VIH positivas en el 2007, el 78% de estas mujeres que fueron detectadas se les dio triple terapia, un 15% monoterapia y sin ningún tratamiento un 7%. Dentro de esta parte, digamos, las mujeres que se quedan con monoterapia son mujeres que realmente no pueden acceder a los centros de atención integral. Nosotros tenemos cinco centros de atención integral en el país, de los cuales hay dos en la ciudad capital y luego tenemos tres distribuidos en diferentes puntos de ubicación en Guatemala. Y a veces llegar a estos centros de atención integral, a veces es un día de recorrido y la gente de bajo recurso y que vive en el área rural, a veces no quiere ir a los centros de atención integral y por eso es que tenemos unas con monoterapia. Este es un informe de monitoreo que se hizo a finales del año pasado. Dentro de esta parte tenemos de los niños que ya cumplieron 18 meses. En el 2006 tuvimos 27, en el 2007 tuvimos 11 casos que del programa de prevención de transmisión vertical salieron positivos. VIH negativos tenemos 52 en el 2006 y del 2007 160. Abandonos tenemos 13 en cada año y fallecidos en el 2006 tenemos 15 y en el 2007 tenemos 42. Y niños en seguimiento teníamos en el 2006 131 y en el 2007 250. En relación a la guía para la orientación sobre alimentación de bebés de mamás con VIH, antes de elaborar la guía se hizo un estudio para indagar con orientadores y con las madres de realmente cómo se estaba llevando a cabo la orientación a alimentación. Estos son cinco aspectos los más grandes y relevantes que se detectó en esta investigación. Los centros de salud están dando la orientación a alimentación cuando una mujer se hace la prueba de embarazo, cuando realmente deberían de estar dando este tipo de orientación después de en una consejería posterior a la entrega de un resultado positivo. Se prescribe leche de fórmula como única opción de alimentación infantil en el contexto de VIH. Posiblemente por el desconocimiento y la falta de capacitación que los orientadores tenían, entonces la madre no tenía ninguna otra opción, a pesar de que a veces no llenaba todos los criterios de AFAS para poder alimentar a su bebé. no se informa sobre las otras opciones de alimentación disponibles en el contexto de VIH. En los servicios de salud del interior del país no se hace una evaluación socioeconómica de la madre o cuidador, solo en los dos centros de atención integral de personas viviendo con VIH de la capital. Y específicamente la evaluación consistía en si las madres tenían la capacidad de poder comprar la leche de bote. No se hace seguimiento del cumplimiento de la opción seleccionada. Dentro de esta parte, cuando se entrevistó a las madres, detectamos que las madres realmente todo lo que eran las recomendaciones en relación a las partes higiénicas y cómo se debe de preparar los biberones no se estaba cumpliendo. La madre o cuidador no decide con qué método va a alimentar a su bebé, es el proveedor de salud que prescribe el uso de fórmula infantil. Cuando se hace de esta manera y no está el compromiso de la madre, realmente es bien difícil que la madre lleve a cabo esta opción. Debido a los hallazgos anteriores que se muestran, distintos abordajes de la orientación en los servicios de salud era un conocimiento el que tenían en los centros de salud muy diferente al que se manejaba en los centros de atención integral. El denominador común de la prohibición de la lactancia materna y prescripción de la leche de bote, el PNS, este es el Programa Nacional de SIDA, consideró pertinente elaborar un conjunto de herramientas que ayuden a facilitar, que ayudaran a sistematizar la orientación en alimentación infantil y VIH y que garantizaran la toma de decisión informada, libre y voluntaria de la madre o cuidador. Dentro de esta parte, cuando iniciamos a elaborar la guía de alimentación en el primer taller que tuvimos, que eran solo orientadores, tuvimos mucha resistencia a incluir la opción de lactancia materna exclusiva. Y dentro de esta parte, porque ellos ya habían tenido un trabajo bien duro, habían detectado a la madre en el primer trimestre, habían dado el tratamiento antirretroviral, habían hecho cesárea, además de eso se le había dado su tratamiento profiláctico al bebé, y darle como a conocer la opción de lactancia materna era como que la madre iba a decidir por esa opción y era como tirar al suelo todo el trabajo que ya se había elaborado. Tenía mucho ese temor a que la madre al final decidiera le vamos a dar lactancia materna en lugar de darle leche de fórmula. Fue una de los aspectos que realmente creó la resistencia en sus inicios. Otro de los puntos es que en Guatemala las mujeres no dan lactancia materna exclusiva, siempre la combinan con atolitos, entonces va a ser bien difícil que se logre dar lactancia materna exclusiva. Otro de los puntos también que fue de pugna fue el desconocimiento de la técnica del uso del vasito. Esto básicamente porque los compañeros no conocían que la técnica y que además pensaban que el bebé recién nacido no es capaz de tomar la leche del vasito, que se iba a ahogar, que se requería que la madre estuviera ahí alimentando al bebé, que usualmente son madres trabajadoras y que no iban a tener el tiempo para poderlo alimentar de esa manera. Poco conocimiento de las otras opciones de alimentación infantil. Entonces, como no conocían las ventajas y desventajas de las otras opciones, vieron que era bien difícil que se estuviera, que realmente se pudiera cumplir. Servidores de salud con un enfoque clínico individual y cerrado. Dentro de esta parte esto es lo que se hace, el desconocimiento que hay del enfoque de salud pública. Yo les mostré al principio el porcentaje que tenemos realmente de agua segura, del 100%, el 15% tiene agua segura en Guatemala. Tenemos una pobreza bien alta. Y tenemos mujeres que son VIH positiva, que son de lugares bien alejados, que solo ir al centro de atención integral es el triple de lo que del costo de un bote de leche. Y luego tenemos lo que les había dicho, es un país multilingüe con factores culturales difíciles que a veces las madres no quieren dar leche de bote porque la propia cultura no se los permite. ¿Qué hicimos para resolver todos estos cuellitos de botella que encontramos? Uno de los aspectos importantes fue la evidencia científica. Dentro de esta parte tuvimos apoyo de OPS Washington y de OMS, que llegaron expertas internacionales a apoyarnos con la evidencia científica. Se hicieron presentaciones de la situación de saneamiento y de agua tratada que teníamos en el país. Además, se les presentó estadísticamente todos los aspectos de morbi mortalidad que teníamos, en el cual se demuestra que tenemos un alto porcentaje de niñez que se está muriendo por enfermedades respiratorias como primera línea. Luego tenemos las diarreas. Y luego explicamos, se llevó una experta en la técnica del uso del vasito. Ella les llevamos bebés recién nacidos, se hizo la demostración del vasito y pues los orientadores pudieron ver que realmente sí funciona, que es mucho más alimentar con un vasito al bebé es mucho más rápido que alimentarlo con biberón. Pues el resultado, tenemos una guía. Tenemos herramientas consensuadas porque tenemos la guía, tenemos las tarjetas, tenemos trifoliares también y una serie de herramientas que van a fortalecer toda la orientación en alimentación. Y estas fueron consensuadas y además contextualizadas. Dentro de esta parte tuvimos tres talleres para poder consensuar el trabajo, en los cuales les comentaba que al principio solo fue un taller con orientadores. Luego hicimos un taller donde ya incluimos orientadores más nutricionistas y el último taller, porque los pediatras se oponían también, entonces incluimos, el tercer taller fue con pediatras, nutricionistas y los orientadores. También tenemos elaborado la metodología de capacitación de las herramientas y tenemos, ya se elaboraron tres talleres de capacitación en los cuales ya cubrimos el 43% del personal de orientación que aborda el tema. Y un poquito se me olvidaba que la guía también fue validada con madres VIH positivas embarazadas. Y los próximos pasos es capacitar al resto de orientadores que tenemos del país, que nos quedan todavía parte del área rural, que pensamos que lo vamos a cubrir en tres talleres que van a estar desarrollados en los próximos meses. También tenemos pendiente la elaboración de una estrategia para hacer un plan de seguimiento de la opción seleccionada. Esto, porque tenemos, nosotros en Guatemala tenemos problemas con el recurso humano, entonces tenemos que elaborar una estrategia donde podamos con el personal humano que tenemos poder darle seguimiento. Los centros de atención integral capitalinos tienen mujeres viviendo con VIH-Sida que son de lugares bien retirados, pero que en ese lugar bien retirado hay un centro de salud y que la orientadora de ese centro de salud, si hacemos una buena contrarreferencia, puede darle seguimiento a ese cumplimiento de esa opción que esa madre tiene. Y mejorar el reporte de orientación del programa de transmisión vertical y de pediatría. Si nosotros tenemos problemas con el reporte, no todos los lugares nos están reportando. Y si logramos el 100% del reporte, vamos a poder monitorear el cumplimiento y la efectividad del programa de prevención de la transmisión vertical. Muchísimas gracias.
At this stage, we would like to thank all our presenters who did a marvelous job and tried to keep in time. They've looked at different things, and I'll do a quick summary. Dr. Law gave us a brief description of what are the guidelines from WHO and globally. Dr. Max Bwepe gave us information on how things are evolving in Zambia. And in all these sessions, In his session, he looked at the effect on introducing the provider-initiated counseling and testing and how that has led to not only seeing evidence of reduction in the infection from mother-to-child transmission, but also seeing an improvement in health facility deliveries in Zambia setting. In the Rwanda setting, we learned that they're doing extremely well in terms of improving the coverage
on ARV that is feasible to introduce the WHO recommended three-tiered approach. They are noting a significant reduction in the use of a single-dose nevirapine and gradual increase on duotherapy. But they are also noting that the HIV-positive women are actually having higher rate of delivery at health facility levels, although there are some challenges, including issues of lab and how to transport the samples. Dr. Professor Ling Hong from China gave an example of how within a low prevalence setting, integrating PMTCT with other related activities like the sexual reproductive health and improving policy is a way to, moving forward, and how that has led to improved coverage and reduction in PMTCT, although they are meeting some challenges and also planning to succeed more. The last presenter from Guatemala talked about their experience on how to, of the way they're introducing PMTCT and their goal of increasing success rate, talked about the challenges related to infant feeding options in that setting, especially taking into account of the issues of poverty and safe water, and all the efforts they've done in terms of looking of innovative and creative way of addressing the issues in order to provide effective and safe infant feeding option as according to AFAS. At this stage, I would like to open let Jim Coker help us to open the discussion, this session for discussion.
This group doesn't need much help. I see a lot of experts in the audience. But in the interest of getting to the opening ceremony, I'm going to limit to three very, very short questions or comments. So are there three people in the back? Yes. And just line up three of you at the microphone, and then we'll cut it off. So first come, first serve.
It's just a question to Dr. Low from WHO. There is quite an international attention now to the use of triple heart for women not yet eligible for heart. So let's say triple heart just as prophylaxis. There will be a suggestion in the new WHO guidelines, so late 2008, to move towards use of triple heart for prophylaxis, and if yes, would be still an nevirapine-based regimen with all the complications for women with more than 250 CD4, and if no, should be so PI-based, unboosted PI in elfinavir or boosted PI? Thanks.
My question is addressed to the speakers of Rwanda. You have demonstrated a very high achievement in terms of coverage, also demonstrating effect on the health system. I suppose that Rwanda has received a lot of resources to do that. I wonder at this stage if you could give us more information about the integration of your PMTCT programs within reproductive health. What are the challenges you are facing at the management level as well as the operational level in terms of human resources? Because I guess at 97% coverage, I think the question now is to find out how this is going to be integrated. And so what are the issues, the lessons learned in that sector at both levels? Thank you.
Hello. Good afternoon. My name is Rangpa Daiju. I'm a pediatric registrar from New Delhi, India. My question is directed towards Dr. Ying Rulu. I wanted to know, you said three-drug regime for a mother for prophylaxis, and you did say it worked better than giving a single drug or a thing. I wanted to ask whether, shouldn't we continue this three-drug regime to all the mother, taking special case in view of a child who is going to be born? And secondly, ma'am, I also want to, you said you saw three or four studies where the breastfeeding transmission rate was highest was 1.1. I was wondering if, suppose, if we do the exclusive breastfeeding, it's fine. But in case if we start to formula feed exclusive for 6 months, in some setup it does occur, then the mother starts feeding the breast milk again. I was wondering whether if we start again, how much is the transmission rate? Thank you.
Okay, who wants to talk about the reaction to the question on women on heart routinely?
The concept, the WHO guidelines process review will look systematically at all available and also upcoming data from clinical trials, from observational studies, but will also review data from program implementation. So we will gather a number of researchers, program planners, implementers to review all the available evidence and decide whether further data are required to make decisions, what are the best and feasible recommendations for WHO guidelines in low and mid-income countries. It will not be done with one consultation, that's for sure, because we will also look at we have to model cost, we have to look at feasibility, we have a grading approach in WHO where we grade the available evidence.
Can I also use this opportunity for an advertisement or a commercial for a session tomorrow at 6:30 called Keeping the Promise about Unite for Children, Unite Against AIDS, which the Columbia University presenter, I think, has done some good studies about the effect of viral load on transmission and recommendations for heart. So that, please join us in one of the session rooms tomorrow at 6:30 for that. On the integration of services and management in Rwanda.
Thank you for the question.
That's on.
Yeah. The integration still a big issue in Rwanda, but we have started to work on this integration. Saying that, PMTCT is. At national level, it's under TRAC, which is Treatment and Research on AIDS Center. And Maternal Child Health Department is not under TRAC. This is a kind of lack of integration. But activities under PMTCT are now being done under maternal and child health department at health facility level. What I'm saying is that, for example, counseling and testing, immunization, follow-up of HIV-exposed children are now being done at health facility level into maternal and child health department. What I'm saying is that we have to do something on integration, but we are starting to work on. Thank you.
Okay. And if I understood the third question, it was to Ying about breastfeeding and one other topic. Did you? I'm sorry, speaking to the microphone.
Maybe I would suggest to the colleague of India that we discuss that after, at the end of the session.
Okay. Does that give us the right to one more question very quickly?
Hi, thanks for the presentations. This is Peter Drobak from Harvard Medical School and Partners in Health in Rwanda. I think one of the biggest hindrances to progress in PMTCT care has been the absence of really good metrics for monitoring and evaluation of programs. PMTCT coverage is just a weak process indicator that can have tenfold variation in efficacy within it, and that's often all that we have to evaluate different programs or different countries. And I'm wondering if Dr. Lowe or anyone else can provide some guidance or feedback on thoughts about more robust indicators for monitoring and evaluation of PMTCT that take into consideration not only transmission but possibly also the survival of the child down the road. Thanks.
Well, WHO, UNICEF, and other development partners, we are working on an indicator framework for PMTCT, and I hope it's about to be published within the next few weeks or month.
Thanks. I know that the presentations were very high quality and very good country examples with indeed a lot of statistics from which we can draw some conclusions about both the successes and challenges of scaling up. So I want to again thank the presenters, but also the good news is that during this week there are going to be quite a few other sessions about PMTCT and about the integration of services. And so it's good that this is on the agenda, and I think this was an excellent substantive start to the to that discussion during the week. So thanks to the sponsors, FHI, UNFPA, WHO, and on behalf of UNICEF as well, we're very pleased that we were able to put this on the agenda and bring more attention to these important questions. So a big round of applause to the excellent presenters.